Welcome to the Agricultural Economics Podcast. This is your host, Jessica Eyes, and I'm here with my co-host, Dr. Ken Foster, the head of the Ag Econ Department here at Purdue. How are you, Ken?
I'm doing well, Jessica. We haven't talked for so long.
I know, it's been ages. Well, today we have a guest who runs one of our, would you call it a center, Ken?
Oh, I think it's probably bigger than a center because it's a council. It's the Indiana Council for Economic Education. It actually is an umbrella for a number of centers around the state of Indiana. So, with us today is the director of the Indiana Council for Economic Education, Jeff Sanson.
Jeff, how are you?
Good, good. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Did you have nice holidays?
It was a nice holiday.
Good.
You know, had kind of some quiet time with the family and just hung around the house and, you know, made a lot of good memories. So.
Good.
And Jeff's still in that span of life where he's got kids at home who believe in Santa Claus and things like that.
Wait,
so he's
your kids
magical.
Don't still believe in
this
Santa Claus?
No, this was
oh, okay.
They're 11 and 14.
But you can pretend they do.
They
still get excited on Christmas morning and come bounding
in
the room.
If they're going to be, you know, talking that Santa isn't real, then maybe the presents don't show up. So it's more for our entertainment.
So maybe
than,
it's the parents who still believe in Santa Claus.
So, Jeff, tell us a little bit about the council.
Well, the Council for Economic Education, this is a an organization that's been around for 60 years, and really the primary mission, what we really want to achieve is improving economic and financial literacy of kids in Indiana. I think you look at the headlines that, you know, families in general are struggling with, financial decision-making, and there's always something in the news that has some relationship to economics, and so being economically and financially literate is critically important to be able to just survive in our economy. So,
what does it mean exactly to be financially and economically literate?
Sure.
What does that translate to?
So there's two, I guess, for literacy, it often looks at the knowledge level. So, do you know, economic concepts are? Do you understand when someone's talking about opportunity cost, what it means to specialize? That's very fundamental level. Financially literate, knowing what, how to make decisions that regarding earning income and career decisions, saving and spending, borrowing, risk management types of decisions. But where the economic and financial literacy definition that we kind of use broadens is that, ultimately you want people to be capable. And so not only know the terms and understand what they mean, but be able to apply those to your life. So when I am given, I graduate from high school and I go out and I am given a student loan, and they say that the student loan will have this interest rate. What does that mean for me in terms of my career path and my capacity to pay that back at a future date? Or when I get my first job, what I learned about investing in the stock market and knowing, where do I want to put my money so that when I do retire, it will be at a level that will afford me the standard of living that I hope to achieve. So it's, and again, it's a lot of it's laying a foundation and a groundwork that students can build on throughout their school career.
So it's really a lot of it is about building critical thinking skills, it sounds like, Jeff.
Sure. In education today, particularly in Indiana, you hear a lot about getting kids college and career ready. And really that skill set, the ability to think economically, is critically important for both of those paths to be able to weigh the pros and cons of your decisions. And further, I think you even add another C, and that's kind of a civic-mindedness, right? So you have to be able to know how society functions and understand the decision-making of your community leaders, your state leaders, and maybe you don't always agree, but to be able to have an informed debate, being, having that economic and financial literacy really does lend itself to a more productive conversation.
Yeah, I remember when I graduated from public high school in Wisconsin, and I went off to college, I had no concept of what a mortgage, like how a mortgage worked, how you bought a car, new car payments were, interest. And I had even had parents who were pretty attentive to, you know, those things, helping me open a bank account, et cetera. But I just didn't get how those things worked. And I really think that's just a huge gap that's just so valuable to fill. And what are some of the challenges that you come across in trying?
So, yeah, there's unfortunately not every child has, you know, a family that is giving them opportunities to not only observe their own financial decision making, but really to practice on their own. So helping them open a bank account, or, you know, working with them to, you know, analyze, all right, I've got these potential career paths or college paths. What are the pros and cons? So what we try to do is, even starting from a very young age, at kindergarten level, is give teachers strategies that they can integrate that into, you know, their daily instruction. And so give students an opportunity to learn and practice. Because it's one thing to hear about it. It's another thing to actually do it. And so, for example, you know, if a student, you know, learning how to manage money, one way that we do that really effectively is through a program we call Classroom Mini Economy. So students in a Classroom Mini Economy have an opportunity to have a job within the classroom, and that job pays money, and they have opportunities to spend that money on things in the classroom, whether it's privileges or maybe there's a classroom store. Sometimes the teacher will instill a series of events that, you know, they may have to pay money for. So if there's a fire drill, well, you know, if you didn't buy the Classroom Economy insurance, you're going to have to pay something there. Or,
oh, that is so genius. Okay, wait, sorry.
No. Yeah. And you know, furthermore, you know, sometimes we'll even take it to helping with classroom management. So classroom fines if a, you know, student doesn't, you know, turn in homework, or if they misbehave. Mm-hmm. And so what it does is it creates a micro sort of simulation where kids actually get to practice saving, spending, you know, taking care of the money that they earn. You know, if you're going to keep it at your desk, you better keep it safe and secure. So, and that, it gives a teacher context for talking about a lot of different things. And depending on the grade level, you know, you can scale up and integrate it into the different subjects. One of the challenges right now is that economics is typically taught in the social studies, and that is a subject that oftentimes gets marginalized with a focus on language arts and mathematics. You know, those are very essential skills, but oftentimes the social studies subjects are given less time in the classroom. So in addition to simulations like I talked about, we try to help teachers integrate into those subject areas. Mm-hmm. For example, we might, if a teacher's reading a children's literature book, like a classic is Alexander, Who Used to Be Rich Last Sunday. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but basically, no. Alexander goes through, he gets some money from his grandparents, and in the book, throughout the course of the week, he encounters all these different opportunities to, you know, he loses some of it, he spends it on, like, some ridiculous types of, you know, rocks or something. Some of it, I think he gets fined, you know, someone takes money away. So you kind of see him go through a kid's version of decision-making throughout the week. And he kind of gets to the end, he's like, well, you, last Sunday, you know, I had $2, I used to be rich, so. but you use that, and so we've created some discussion questions around that, so that when a teacher uses that book, they can say, okay, you know, you got your language arts, you get your reading in, and then you extend it, and it doesn't really add, you know, a whole nother thing to the instructional day.
It's really cool. So Jeff, one of the things that keeps sort of spinning through my mind, and maybe I'm going to get us off the topic of the Indiana Council, but while we've got you here, maybe explore that. I mean, are there unique ways that we can help young people think about making investments in productive capital? So, you know, of course, we're in agriculture here, so we think of farmland, but, you know, it could be, you know, investing in some other, a store or small business. Could even be investing in the stock market, mm-hmm. you know, in terms of having some sort of productive capital that generates return longer.
But first, define productive capital.
Well, I mean, you know, something that generates an income, right? You know, my car is not a piece of productive capital beyond the fact that I use it to get to work, right? I mean, it's going to lose value the day I buy it. You know, but something that generates income, like farmland or like a business, or even sometimes some depreciable assets, you know, might generate productivity and generate an income.
Sure.
And it might be able to rent them to somebody else or use them in some productive way.
Sure.
To generate income that, you know, I don't have to be sitting there toiling over necessarily.
So, again, I mentioned earlier that it's about getting kids these hands-on experiences. So it's one thing to tell them you can invest. It's another thing to actually kind of guide them through that process and let them try it themselves. And so we sponsor a simulation called the Stock Market Game. And in the Stock Market Game, kids get a portfolio, a hypothetical portfolio of $100,000, and they're able to invest in stocks, bonds, mutual funds for a period of 10 weeks. And, you know, what that does, because they have this, you know, and it's the stocks they invest in, it's all real time. And so, you know, the market goes up, or if their stock goes up, they see the value of their portfolio increased. And what this simulation really has the impact of on the students is, you know, they're going out and trying to learn more about the market themselves. So the teachers kind of lay a basic foundation. What's a stock? What's the stock market? Why do people save and invest? And then as they're investigating, you know, what do these companies make? You know, what are the goods they produce? What are the services they provide? Why is this company making a profit? Why is this company not making a profit? They start to ask those questions. What we really like, so that's kind of the, you know, one benefit. What we see is oftentimes they'll go home and they start to have these conversations with mom and dad. Do you own stocks and bonds and mutual funds? You know, which ones do you own? You know, can you help me make some decisions? Or these are ones that I found. You know, this is something I think could earn money over a period of time. It gives them that taste and that look into a very well-known and important market in the United States. So for them, that's a good way. That's a good foundation. Now, you know, do we expect that they're going to finish the program and be, you know, investment brokers? Absolutely not. But when they get that opportunity to save and invest and make a decision, you know, all right, I'm only getting, you know, less than 1% in my savings account, and I have this goal of, you know, buying a house, buying a car, or sending, you know, my own kids to college. I know
retiring at 50.
Yeah, there are
40.
There are assets that, you know, have the opportunity to grow over time. So
yeah, no, I think that's hugely important, especially if you think about the sort of demographic shifts of the parents. That, you know, 40 years ago, when I was a teenager, many of my contemporaries came from families that had small businesses, so they saw their parents actively investing in the business assets, and so that example of investing, I think, was really tangible. But today, where we think about, okay, there are far fewer, you know, mom and pops, grocery, hardware, etc. A lot of us are working for, you know, the big boxes.
Mm-hmm.
And so our kids don't see that behavior model. So I think having an experience like this is huge.
Yeah.
My last question for you, Jeff, before we wrap up, is where do you hope to see the council go? And if people want to help or contribute to the mission, how can they do that?
Sure. So the way that we achieve our goal of improving economic and financial literacy students is we work directly with teachers and educators. And so my goal is that, you know, we continue to increase the number of teachers that we work with. For many teachers, particularly elementary teachers, they may not have had a course in economics and personal finance in their pre-service program, their teacher preparation program. And so, you know, for them to be more effective in teaching this, you know, we help them understand the content and give them strategies. So, you know, one goal definitely is to increase the number of teachers that we get out to our workshops and in our programs. High school teachers, you know, typically have had a good background in content. They're looking for engaging strategies and changing strategies. You know, as more digital resources come into come into the classroom, it's using those effectively. It's not enough just to flip your classroom and, you know, put your PowerPoint up on the website. So that's a reaching out and continuing to innovate. And so we do things like we're developing a digital app for an iPad that, you know, teachers will be able to use. So, but for, you know, for ways that people can help our organization is, let teachers know, in your community, if your kids are in a classroom and, send them a link to the Indiana Council website, there's all sorts of resources that teachers can access from there. If you go to the Ag Econ website and you click on centers, there's a direct link to our website there.
And the link is listed below this podcast too.
We have an advisory board with a number of committees, and so if people have a particular skill set, whether it's marketing or they want to volunteer at one of our academic competitions, there's always, we're always looking for folks to get involved that way. And then, certainly one of the ways that we're able to provide programming is through grants and contributions. So, if someone wants to bring a program to a school in their area or county, we're certainly able to work with them to provide either the workshops or the programs directly. So those are really the three ways that, will help make a difference in improving students' understanding of this.
Fantastic. And I just want to say that we are proud in agricultural economics to have the Indiana Council for Economic Education as a part of our department.
Thank you so much, Jeff, for joining us.
Thanks for having me today.
Yeah, appreciate of course. It. This has been the Purdue Agricultural Economics Podcast. You can go ahead and visit us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter, or you can check us out on our website
at www.agecon.purdue.edu.
Thank you.